Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and I want to thank you for joining me here for episode number 451. In just a few moments, I'll be sharing with you a conversation I had with Dr. Keshana Guidry. Dr. G, as she's known, is a hospice physician and has a unique mobile concierge end-of-life practice where she makes home visits to people who sometimes fall through the cracks and are either discharged from hospice care or don't qualify for hospice care. So she is a person who, all on her own, is filling in some of the gaps that exist in her community around hospice care. She also provides coaching for physicians who want to become hospice physicians. And she does also work for a hospice, and she has a podcast as well. So you'll really enjoy my conversation with Dr. G. She's amazing, and I can't wait for you to get acquainted with her and her work and her books and start connecting with her. So that's coming up in just a moment. I have an announcement I want to share with you, something that I'm very excited about. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you may remember that 2 years ago, I announced that I was helping my friend publish her novel titled All the Flowers of the Mountain. She received a sudden serious illness diagnosis, and at that time, we had no idea what was going to happen or how long the future might be for her. So we published her novel in a very short time and were able to get it out to the world. And subsequently, that novel won the Colorado Book of the Year. It received a bronze medal from a Bronze IPPI Award, which is for independent publishing. And she was also a finalist for the New Hampshire Book Awards. So this novel, it's amazing. It's been out in the world, selling really well and winning awards. And last year, Christina published a book of short stories. Her short story is called Table for One. So that was the next project to work on. And now the audiobook of All the Flowers of the Mountain has just been released and is available for sale. And this audiobook is so beautiful and incredible. It's professionally recorded and produced, narrated, recorded and produced, unlike my books, which I've done myself at home. This was done in a professional studio. It includes music in parts of the book. It's so beautiful. So I just wanted to tell you about it. It's available now on Audible, All the Flowers of the Mountain by Christina Holbrook. I'm so proud that she's been able to make this happen, and I'm so thrilled that Christina is doing well. Her MRI scans continue to be positive, and so this has been an amazing journey for her. And I'm going to have Christina come on as my guest on the podcast in the next few months, along with the producer who helped produce the audiobook, so that we can talk about this idea of how do we continue being creative even when we get a serious illness diagnosis? How do we stay in the moment and keep doing our good work in the world? Among other things. So I'm really excited to share that conversation with you down the road, but I wanted to let you know about the audiobook being available right now on Audible. And if you like listening, which I assume you do because you're listening to a podcast right now, then get the audiobook, even if you've already read the book. It's a really different experience to listen to a professional narrator read the book and actually act the book, the parts in the book, than to just read it yourself. So All the Flowers of the Mountain by Christina Holbrook, available on Audible, but also you can get the paperback, ebook, and hardcover book on Amazon as well. And I will leave the link for that book in the show notes for this episode. So go to eolupodcast.com if you'd like to get a hold of that audiobook. Next, I want to thank my latest supporters on Patreon, James Reinders, Karen, and Susan Wright. Thank you so much for signing up on Patreon and joining our community there. And also thank you to Frederick Marks for buying me a coffee. For you and for all of the people who've been supporting this podcast over the years, I just want to express my gratitude. It makes all the difference to me to know that you're out there listening and you appreciate this work that I do, and you're willing to step up and make a small contribution. That touches my heart, and it really keeps me going. You have no idea how sustaining it is for me. So thank you once again. We're going to move on now with my conversation with Dr. G, Keshana Guidry, and I'll come back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. Today, I am so excited to welcome my special guest, Dr. Keshana Guidry. Dr. G, as she is known, is a two-time author, podcaster, healthcare advocate, mentor, and educator available for your healthcare consulting needs. As a compassionate and tenacious end-of-life mobile concierge physician and sociologist, she specializes in problem-solving during difficult times. She loves home visits, oh, so do I, my favorite thing, and believes that a cheerful heart is good medicine. Dr. G is the founder of Morning Dove Medical and the host of the podcast, Dr. G at the Heart of Healthcare. She's also the author of The Real Deal About Hospice, and you can learn all about her work at the website Morning Dove Medical, and that's Morning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, and also on Instagram at Morning Dove Medical, and you should definitely follow her on Instagram. So Dr. G, welcome and thanks so much for joining me.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm here. You're like my professor of hospice.
Oh, well, I mean, that's really nice for me to hear. I'm really glad you've told me you've been inspired by listening to the podcast, and makes me happy to know somebody has listened to it. So,
of course, it's been so, so helpful. Like I've shared, you know, when I first started in 2019, I needed, you know, more information. And so I literally went on to the podcast app and searched hospice, and it said End of Life University. And I said, hey, that looks like a good one. And here we are.
Here we are. Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I'm really eager for you to share your journey, because you've had somewhat an atypical journey into healthcare and then hospice care. And so I'd love for you to just tell our listeners your story.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm a Los Angeles native. I currently live in San Diego as an empty nester with my husband and dog, but I'll tell you how I got here. So I went to UCLA, and right out of college, I taught elementary school. So that's where my really passion for education comes from. And my husband and I, we were married, so we started our family right away, and I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom, and so I devoted myself to, you know, taking care of my kids. I was one of those moms watching Oprah Winfrey every day, you know, going to the park, going to Chuck E. Cheese, going to the train park, you know, all those play date things that stay-at-home moms are typically accustomed to, and I did that until, you know, my children were in preschool or in school. So there came a point when my third child, my daughter, I had dropped her off at preschool, and I was in my Suburban by myself. And I had this realization, like, wow, like, what else am I going to do? I didn't want to go back to teaching. And I was kind of in a place where I had to figure out, you know, what is it that I wanted to do? And long story short, I decided that I was going to go to nursing school, become a labor and delivery nurse, like the other end of life. And so I started taking the prerequisite courses at the local community college. And that was my first bout in real hardcore science. Obviously, I had to take undergraduate science courses at UCLA, but it was, you know, earthquakes, you know, marine biology, not the ones for pre-med. So while I was on this pre-nursing course back in 2006, this light bulb just came on. You know, I took biology, microbiology, anatomy, and physiology. And by the time I had completed those three courses, I had decided I wanted to go to medical school and know everything about the human body because I was so intrigued by the things that I was learning in human physiology. Applied to medical school, didn't get in, became a phlebotomist. Again, had this journey. Long story short, I did get in. I went to medical school at Texas A&M. My family and I moved down to College Station, Texas. I graduated, matched internal medicine. During medical school is when I was introduced to palliative care. And that's when, again, I said, wait a minute, what is this palliative care business? And I was like many of the people that we have to educate here. We have to help them understand that, hospice is not giving up hope. Palliative care is not hospice. Again, all the things that we teach, I went through that journey myself. And so I realized that I wanted to follow that path, and I did. So I ended up going to residency, doing electives in palliative medicine there. And I got lucky right out of residency to be able to work at a small hospice agency in California that needed a medical director. Now, there's a lot of that that goes on. We don't want to get into the California story, but everyone knows California has a lot of hospice agencies. And so I was able to work at one, and that's where I learned everything. And I've continued to move on and on and on, worked for national agency, and then that's it. Like it's kind of started there and blossomed into a bunch of other things that I do today.
And then you started your own kind of separate business, right? Mourning Dove Medical. And first of all, I'm curious of what that consists of. And then what inspired you to do that when you're already a full-time mom and full-time doctor? How you even had the energy to start something else on the side?
So, I gave that short version of my story, but that actually happened over a number of years. So, when I started medical school, my kids were in middle school, right? So, then when I graduated from medical school, the following year, my first kid graduated from high school, then my second kid graduated from high school, then the other one graduated from high school. So, when 2019 showed up, all the kids were gone.
Yeah, that makes
If that
sense.
makes sense. And so I worked for a small hospice agency in 2021, in the thick of the pandemic, and I decided to start a mobile practice to help take care of the patients that were discharged for extended prognosis from hospice. That was the intention. I was at an agency that had hospice, home health, and palliative care. I was serving as the palliative care medical director at the time and doing all the face-to-face visits for hospice. But I wanted to help them with their CAP and all those things and kind of support the agency with all the patients that had piled up from the pandemic. And so that's where it started just for me to. Again, it wasn't money driven or anything. I didn't even get payment for most of them, but it was to take care of them until they returned back to hospice care. Because as when folks lose that benefit, they're kind of lost.
Yeah, we should talk about that a little bit because many people probably don't realize that that can happen to people who, for one reason or another, their prognosis is now more extended than it was when they first came on, or they're not declining. And for me, that was the most heartbreaking experience I had in hospice is when we ended up having to discharge someone who had benefited so much from having all these services and the presence of people in their home, and then to have to tell them, sorry, you don't qualify anymore. And I really wanted to explain that so people understand that that actually does happen to people.
Yeah, it does. And so, for everyone listening, we know the hospice benefit is for anyone with a terminal condition and they have a prognosis of 6 months or less. But not everyone dies on hospice. We know everyone's afraid of the H word. And so they think when you go to hospice, that means you're going to die. But not everyone dies. Some people are approaching death because they're so sick, but many times they can stabilize with the intense care you get from hospice. I actually consider hospice to be like the ICU at home because, we're not curing anything, but you're getting the nurse visits, you're getting all of the care. You're getting the doctor on call 24 hours a day. You're having psychosocial support. All that can help someone, who would maybe not do so well if they continued on their heart failure exacerbation recurrent track. We talked about that recently on my podcast, but people can get better. And then when they're better, then they get discharged if it's been, over, I think people try to keep them for a while, but if it's been like a year or more, then they consider, discharging them because there's no change. The doctors, we have to write a paragraph called a CTI to Medicare, and it has to document how sick the person is or things that are changing. And when it's no longer changing, then we're forced to discharge them, or the agency doesn't get paid, and that's the reality of it.
Yeah, and it makes sense because the hospice funding is there for a specific time period, that period in which someone is declining toward death, and when there's good news that someone is actually doing better and not in that time frame any longer, or at that particular time, it makes sense we need to shift. But I'm really heartened to hear it sounds like you were able to still make a home visit app to those people after they are taken off of service.
Yeah, I was. So since we have palliative care and home health, there was one of two options for the patients, if they qualified for the palliative program that we had with those particular contracts, then we would put them there. But otherwise, we would use home health for a while and I would see them and they would get the support they needed.
So they still had that continuity through you, at least, of coming to visit them, which
I've come to visit them.
that's
That's
so amazing. And that seems like such a relief to me just seeing some really heartbreaking cases where people were sent away and didn't really have a replacement for the care they had received. I love that you're able with this service to kind of bridge the gap in care that has existed by making sure that the patients still got to see a provider and still have learn about anyway what access they might still have to some services.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was wonderful to be able to do that. And so since then, I ended up leaving that agency because I wanted to work for a national corporate hospice. And so I did do that for some time. And I continued with Mourning Dove, supporting small agencies on the side. I had one that I was helping for about a year and a half, just being their backup on call, in case their medical director went on vacation, maybe helping another one over here for a couple months until they found someone. Because I enjoy the education with the team, and that really brought me a lot of joy. And then it's turned into, taking that education to the podcast and to the books, because again, that supports the hospice industry, and that's what gives me great joy.
Yes, definitely. So, as a concierge end-of-life physician, what does that consist of for you now?
So today it's taking care of people who are, I have a recent example. So someone who left their home that they had raised their children in, moved to a new state, and now living in a memory care. So we know when someone has Alzheimer's, dementia, or some other type of dementia, and they're in a memory care, they're not necessarily going in and out of the community. And so I will be the physician on call at this residential care facility for the elderly so that the med techs will have someone to call just in case they need something. Because these places, they're non-medical. So, they can't put a Band-Aid on someone without a doctor's order. So you can't necessarily call the traditional primary care doctor in the middle of the night. Not everyone is on hospice yet. And we don't have palliative care, right? So I'm kind of filling in that void of care for people until they need hospice, since I have the foresight of what's going to happen down the road, and I can do that dynamic advanced care planning with the family. I don't think they recognize how important the model is right now. I had a recent family, we had so many emails, meetings, calls, texts. You would never get that with your no normal doctor. And so, we're kind of getting the kinks out of that, but that's what my focus is for those people who are, pre-hospice, if you will, if that's even a word.
I love that model, and it's such a good way of bridging some of the troublesome gaps that we have around end-of-life care, just by having a doctor like yourself who's willing to do it and to be flexible enough to go into different situations and also has the wherewithal. I mean, your expertise tells you when it's time for someone to go on hospice, and so you're such a good guide for people as they're facing these issues.
Yeah, and I just hope they see that and it's embraced more. I have no interest in having, 100 patients or anything like that. A small cohort, and bridge them on to their next stage, because there will be a next stage, and the final stages of life shouldn't be someone being in and out of the hospital every month for a UTI. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where that comes in.
Okay. Oh, that's really wonderful. And then I know you mentioned that you're passionate really about educating other physicians about hospice care and palliative care as well, because it's still a little bit shocking to me, but so many physicians out there don't know the difference between palliative care and hospice, and also just don't know that much about it. So I know you wrote a book called Seven Things Hospice Physicians Need to Know to Be Ready for Work, which seems like a great support for physicians who might be considering going into hospice. So just tell us about that.
Yeah, so that book was born from the information that I had that I was sharing with, other physicians that would come work at our agency, and they were new to hospice, maybe laying off of family medicine and wanting to focus on hospice, as many do. And also some of the fellows at Stanford, they were rotating with me during their hospice rotation. And so there's a certain just baseline information someone needs just to get started with work. You're going to get the modules, you're going to get those things, but people really needed a framework of what it is to start tomorrow. Let's say you got to start tomorrow. So I one day just wrote down, a mnemonic. We love mnemonics. What could hospice stand for? Let's use that. And so it happened. And so I released it yet last year on Doctor's Day. So the hospice mnemonic is H is for home visits, O being on call, S signing stuff, P prognostication, I IDT, C CTIs, and E is engagement. Those type of things we do, maybe going to a party at the local memory care, right? Or doing a presentation at, for oncology group or for, the liver transplant team, so that we can build that collaboration. So that's what that book was for. It's just 30 pages, and it's everything any physician can use so that they can support a hospice agency. And in California, it's really important because, like I said, we have so many hospice agencies here, and a lot of these hospice agencies, they're flipping doctors left and right. And so I figured if you're just going to have a random person just to sign the CTI, they should at least know what they're getting into. So that's why the book is there.
So very true. And I love when I think back to it. I mean, I remember making my very first home visit as a hospice physician, and it was like nothing I'd ever done before. I was used to being in a medical office where I had a medical assistant and a receptionist, and there was a nurse and all these people I could rely on who were like my support staff, and to be out there all alone at a home visit. It was intimidating at first, but then I discovered it how incredible it is to actually sit in a patient's home with them and kind of see their whole life on display before you in their home. It's
Yeah.
just so beautiful.
It's so beautiful and it's so free. It's so beautiful and free. I remember when I first had a fellow go with me to a home visit. She was trying to keep it in the box of visits, right? She's like, "Wait, I didn't see you do this. I didn't see you do that." I was like, "You actually do a lot with your eyes. You just talk to them, and you're going to hear if they have conversational dyspnea. You're going to hear what they had for breakfast. You're going to hear about their appetite while you're having a conversation." And so that's the beauty of what we get to do. So, hospice and palliative care, this was a natural niche for me since I lived life before. Like, I couldn't imagine having 10 or 15 minutes with a person.
Yeah, it's so true. And I wish every doctor could hear that, because I imagine that thought, if you've never made a home visit, also feels like an obstacle to many physicians to going into hospice and palliative care. But it's amazing. And you will, I mean, suddenly I felt like I want to practice all medicine this way. When I went back to family medicine, I just wanted to make home visits to people. I thought this would be so much more valuable. So that booklet, Seven Things Hospice Physicians Need to Know, that seems so very helpful as a guide that anyone thinking about hospice may want to look at, just to give them a real vision of what it will be like or the things that they'll be doing. So where can people get a hold of that
So
booklet?
that one is on Amazon. Both of them are on Amazon, or they can get it directly from my website. And when they get it from my website, I actually created a learning community, kind of an in group, so we can text back and forth. So it's out there.
And then I thought I read that you do some coaching for other hospice physicians. Is that still going on?
Yeah, so that would be a part of it. If someone is wanting to get into it, I have an exclusive group that they could be a part of, so they can kind of bounce things off, within a circle that understands what they're going through. So absolutely.
I think that's really helpful as well, because the hospice physician role is a little different, and usually, at least where I worked, I was the only physician on the team, and so I didn't feel like I had a direct peer that I could talk to about, but just even about what was happening for me and the issues I was experiencing in this new line of work. So that also sounds really helpful.
Physicians do a lot of side gigs, right? And most of the time, unlike you and I, people use hospice as a side gig. So I think if they're going to do that, they should do it right. And it's our responsibility as the hospice and palliative care community to guide them.
Yes. Yes. And there's so much more to know than physicians may realize before they get into it. So it's really helpful to look into the booklet that you offer, because they'll be better off if they're better educated and prepared.
Absolutely. And I'll just take a little note from my friend Lauren Templeton, our regulatory guru. There's a lot of risk, if you don't know the regulations and you're signing attestations for the CTI, for terminal illness, or that you've done the face-to-face. People get arrested for that. People get into trouble for with Medicare for fraud, and you may lose your ability to bill Medicare. So it's really important for you to have a baseline knowledge. You don't have to go get the certification. While I do recommend doing the hospice certification, but at minimum, you need to know what you're getting into.
Yeah, that's so very true, because the temptation is there when you make a certification visit. You'll see all kinds of families that desperately need help, and you can see, oh my goodness, they could really use the services that we provide. But it isn't about that. It's about the qualifications or the criteria of the patient's illness and where they are in that trajectory that makes them certifiable for hospice. And that's a hard thing to remember sometimes.
Yes. So yeah, we're here to help you.
Yes, that's really wonderful. And then your latest book is called The Real Deal About Hospice. So tell us more about that book and who you wrote that book for.
So first of all, I wrote that with an end-of-life doula. Some call it a death doula, and I learned about that on your podcast. It's so interesting that full circle
Full circle.
information. I wrote The Real Deal About Hospice with a nurse, LVN. She's also certified in palliative care and hospice, and she's an end-of-life doula. Her name is Sharon Harris. And we wanted to write a book that could bridge the information gap for people so that they would know when it's time for hospice care. Instead of relying on, someone to tell them it's time, I wanted people to have the information in their hands so they could know what to expect. So we really worked hard when we created these short stories highlighting the advantages of hospice care. We wanted it to have a positive spin. We wanted to take the punch out of the word hospice and the fear and kind of neutralize it so that people would say, oh, I need to get this book because my dad was just diagnosed with ALS. Let me read this book so I know when it's time without fear. That was the
Yes.
intention. That was the intention. And even a physician, they can have it, a family physician, because they have a hard time, referring their patients to hospice. Or sometimes they're not even in the picture because their patients have been in and out of the hospital for the past year. They haven't seen their physician for years. So anyway, so they could prepare in advance for when it's time. So each of the chapters is a diagnosis or body system that's generally covered in the Medicare hospice benefit. So it's nine chapters. So we have ALS, Alzheimer's disease. We have an HIV chapter, heart disease, liver disease, renal disease, stroke and coma, and I'm missing a couple other ones. But basically covered every body system so that, oh, cancer. So people would know, oh, okay, this is what it looks like. So maybe we should shift gears instead of waiting until the 11th hour and last breath to call the hospice agency.
Wow, I love the idea because stories are the most powerful medium we have, really, for making change and for opening people's hearts and minds. And so to be able to utilize those stories, to just to trigger for people a recognition like, oh, that's what's happening with my mom right now. Oh, that's where we are. Could be so powerful. And to say there are so many physicians who are devoted to curative medicine and curative treatments who do a wonderful job at that, but their mind is simply not on hospice and palliative care necessarily. We wish it would be, but that may not be what they're seeing at the moment. So it may not come to their minds initially when early on, when the time is right for a referral. They just might not think of it, but it's really good having these stories that might trigger some of that thinking for them.
Yeah, I love that. And something that kind of pierced my heart, our friends at the Death Deck, they put out really good, posts on social media. And one time they had a post right before I released the book, and it said, it was a quote from a family, "Why didn't the doctor tell us about hospice sooner?" And that just, oh, just breaks my heart.
Yeah, it's so very sad. And while, on the one hand, I get it. I understand how busy doctors can be and how little time there seems to be, and there's so many things to focus on. But it just seems like we need to raise the level of concern about hospice and palliative care in their minds so that it's at the forefront of their thinking instead of, off on some back burner.
Yeah, and I was just reading the facts and figures from NHPCO preparing for a presentation, and I saw that the median length of stay has gone down one day. Now it's 17 days. And
Oh
so
gosh.
we have all these hospices and all this care, but people are not accessing it. And so we need to do something. We need to fix that.
Yeah, and it seems like there are a lot of people working hard to try to change that, but maybe we're not using the right approach necessarily. I like the idea of using stories to educate the public, the general public, because anyone has the right to go into the physician and say, Is my mom eligible for hospice? What do you think about hospice or palliative care? To ask that question. And so we need to empower people to be able to look out for themselves and to seek out the right treatment that they need.
Yeah, that is what it's for. And so it's out there. I'm grateful we released it on World Hospice and Palliative Care Day. And I just hope that it helps people. That's it.
Well, so it sounds like it's easy for lay people to read. You don't have to have a medical education to understand
No.
it. So it could be a great gift for someone with aging parents, you know, who are beginning to deal with, you know, with some of the chronic illnesses and issues of older life, but or for anyone in the healthcare field to have on hand.
Yeah, it is. It's for people with aging parents. It's a good textbook for end of life doulas since they're non-medical, but I believe they need to have a baseline knowledge of the hospice stuff. You know, so it's good for that. And even caregivers, I've some caregiving agencies have gotten the book and using it to help their caregiving teams who are non-medical. And so it's, again, it's the things that we know. It's basically the LCD guidelines just hidden in the stories.
I really like that. So I'm going to get a copy of that right away to have on hand. And then you're also doing a podcast. So I don't know how you're doing all of these things because I understand it's hard to write books and it's hard to do a podcast and it takes a lot of time. But so I'm really curious about your podcast, Dr. G at the Heart of Healthcare. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so it originally started when I was with another hospice agency. It was just a small project with the marketing team, and it had a different name. It was called The Heart of Healthcare with Dr. G. So if someone looks that up, there's actually a different logo, different color, red from 2021. And in 2023, I rebranded it, you know, did the Mourning Dove logo and brought it back with the intention of educating and empowering people and helping them see what's needed to navigate the healthcare system. And so the CSEE stands for Story, Educate, and Empower. So yeah, I package everything again. I think that comes from me being a tutor. I would always lose my two T's, right? I get them good in their session and they don't need me anymore. So that's, I'm okay with that. Giving them what they need so they know how to be a great student, so they know how to access what they need. So my advocacy passion is just in the book so people can go take what they need from the book or the podcast. So the podcast is actually off season. I'm only doing one episode a month. And I'll be coming back on National Healthcare Decisions Day. But it's just, again, small bite-sized pieces of information. It's not as long as yours or as in-depth. I like to give people one thing that they could take away each episode. So my most recent one, for instance, was for Heart Month. I had a cardiologist on there, and we actually talked about chapter 4 in the book so that people could see that as a story and know about heart failure during Heart Month, because the American Heart Association didn't really talk about the end stage of heart disease. They only talk about prevention. So I wanted to bring in the public on what to expect at the end stages. And so that was it.
Oh, I really like that. And I like how it ties together with your book as well.
Yeah. It's not always that way. You know, in January, I did an episode with the local San Diego doctor who's does medical aid in dying. And so we did an episode on that again, so that people would know what does that mean and where is it, you know, legal, and just the basic steps. And so that's what it is. But I'm really excited about National Healthcare Decisions Day coming up.
So that's when season 2 will start. And do you have any hints about what you're going to be doing in season 2?
Yes, I'll share. We're actually doing a kind of collaboration with the Heart of Hospice and also having an interdisciplinary panel. You don't want to miss it.
Oh, fantastic. That's oh,
Yeah, it's
that sounds
exciting.
really wonderful.
Yeah, because
Well,
people don't
that's
even know about National Healthcare Decisions Day.
yeah, I know. It's shocking. We have all these great movements out there, and all of us who are in the bubble, in our bubble we've created here, we all know about all these things going on, and yet we haven't been great at getting the word out to other people. So this is what we need, more of these conversations and more opportunities to let people know what's happening out there in the world.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you just a few things just about your thoughts of what do you wish people in our society understood about the end of life and d death in general?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question. And I want them to know it's not scary that the problems or the anxiety that they're feeling is because they're not communicating. You know, like I mentioned, I coached my family. You know, we just need to ask what's important. And there's no big confrontation, there's no huge thing. We just need to let this person, again, there's someone in the family who's actually opened the door for people to talk, but no one's taken, no one's crossing into that, I guess, fear abyss. And I'm saying, hey, she is inviting you to talk to her about it, and you're not responding. And that's the lonely place that we see as hospice physicians, right? That's how we advocate, you know, when we're in a hospital or when we're trying to facilitate a family meeting, trying to help a caregiving daughter kind of slow down and just talk to their parent, or helping the spouse realize that they may not be taking their spouse home from this hospital visit. So talking is the most important thing, and you don't have to have a big, like I said, you know, dissertation, just saying what matters to you. And just saying that can open the whole door and your hearts can meet. But many times people don't stop.
Yeah, and I think that's so true. Even for people who've maybe had a fractured relationship or difficult relationship in the past, those old issues can be set aside if we can still come together and talk about, well, what's happening now and what do you need or want right now in your life so that we don't let past hurts obstruct this process that could help us reconnect and actually help us heal.
Yeah, I love you talk a lot about that, and you know, we see it so many times. You know, people have asked, how do you know when things go well? And it's when the family is able to surround their loved one and they're at peace, and they afterwards they tell us nothing was left unsaid. That's it.
Yeah, I love that. And then we feel like we've done our jobs when we've helped people get to that place. And it's remarkable how much the support of a hospice staff or an end-of-life doula, another person from outside the family, what a difference that person can make in coming in and just facilitating those conversations.
Yeah, I think, you know, since we are comfortable in the death and dying, we hold that space for them. So I think we act as the bridge for them so they can talk and they can release the fears and the anxiety, the conflicts and all that stuff. So that's what we do. So that's why we have to take care of each other, and that's why I'm grateful for you know, for everything you're teaching us even to be in that space.
It is true. And I like that you mentioned we have to take care of each other. We have to take care of ourselves too, because we know burnout is an issue for people in healthcare right now. Do you do any special things for self-care?
Oh yeah, I actually have a really good friend. We joke about how extraordinary our self-care routines are. So yes, I actually took myself on a trip for Valentine's Day. Well, Galentine's Day, the girl one on the 13th. Took myself on a trip, solo trip. Every day is pretty much spa day at my house for myself. So the bubble bath, the candles, the music. that's something just every day, just to get through the things that we do. I get regular massages. Again, this just brings the anxiety and the stress out of our bodies, because sometimes we're pushing on and we can do it. We can push through, but our bodies absorb all that stress. And so these things like baths and massages, they just kind of move the stress out, and then we absorb more stress. So yes, I do a lot. The self-care is not an issue for me.
That's really good to hear. And having met you in person at Endwell last year, I can say that you are so joyful and also, as we know, as we hear, full of laughter. And so I would imagine laughter is one of your tools too, because it seems to me like you just are always finding joy and something to celebrate and something to laugh about.
Yeah, you have to, and of course I modulate it, right? I cry with people. It's appropriate, for everyone listening, but I just a part of my personality is joy, the joy that I have. And so I'm grateful to have that personality and to be able to use that when necessary. Because we have a lot of pain in the world. We have the opposite of that. And so I'm grateful that I am able to be a person to walk through the pain with people and then bring them through the other side.
Well, I imagine that you are very helpful to other staff members wherever you go, wherever you're working, just because of this, the aura that you bring of joy, but also calmness and being a really safe container that other staff members get to feel that from you and share in that with you. And I'm just imagining that Dr. G is very well loved wherever she goes.
We have lots of fun. We have lots of fun. My last team, we would have really colorful IDG meetings, because that's a time for us to lean on one another, kind of get the stress off, bond, and we really had some good times.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. And it's amazing how much we can support each other, when we bring our whole selves into this work, and how valuable it is to be part of a team and be able to collaborate.
It's really good.
Well, I also wanted to ask if there are things that you've learned about life, through working with people at the end of life. Are there any lessons for your life that you've taken home from all the work that you've done?
Yeah, it's simple as living each day. Like I call it a hospice lifestyle. My husband knows about it. Again, none of us were promised anything. We're theoretically healthy, you and I, but again, we don't know. We've had a 30-something-year-old with breast cancer dying, or colon cancer again. So this just makes me live, say the thing that needs to be said. Check on people, resolve the conflict, start the podcast, write the book. Why not? Ask for help. I just kind of, I guess, go courageously, right? We had our hospice and palliative care theme this year was courageous conversations. So that courage part, I think it pushed it more. I'm a pretty bold person just in my personality and my background. Everyone, I'm from LA. They know people from New York, from the East Coast have a certain personality. Well, I'm from LA, like LA, LA. And people know what that means. And so being in the end of life has just made me, of course, protect my peace and own my peace and what I bring to the table, but also courageously move people through what they need to do, without fear. We can't, because we don't have time. We don't have time. And I've put things off before, maybe having a conversation with a patient, or, oh, when I come to the next visit, they're gone. So every single day, I treat it like my last day.
I love the term that you used, hospice lifestyle. I think that's really a great way to think about it because it's really just something for every moment, every day to be thinking about the choices we're making and what we're bringing to life and how we're looking at it.
Yeah, like if you want to, go to the beach today, okay, well let's get cooler and let's go. Like that's what we're doing.
Yeah, there's no time like the present moment. Well, what a delight it is to talk with you, Kaishana, Dr. G. And I'm hoping that we can stay friends. I would love to connect with you when I'm in San Diego, and I hope we will have other opportunities to talk to each other.
Oh, I hope so. I hope so because you are a wealth of knowledge, and I think we have those things in common. We became grandmas at the same time, and I'm just so grateful to have this opportunity to talk to you and be a guest on podcast that was my university.
Yeah. Wow. I should send you a graduation certificate or something.
I need my diploma.
Your diploma from End of Life University.
Oh, thank you so much for this.
Well, I'll remind listeners to go to morningdovemedical.com, Kaishana's website, to check out her work and get her books. And we'll stay in touch for sure.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dr. G. I found it so refreshing and inspiring. On the one hand, I'll share because she's relatively new in the hospice world, and her attitude and perspective is so fresh and so open, and she has just totally stepped up and is doing what's necessary in her community to help fill in the gaps. And I sometimes feel that those of us who've been around for years and years, we've seen lots and lots of changes. We may be just a little bit more jaded about hospice in a way, or feeling a little bit more disillusioned or discouraged about hospice. And Dr. G reminds me that that's not really where things are right now. Things are actually going better than we even imagine sometimes, and that we need to let go of the past and we need to be in the present and making the most of what's here right now and how we are helping people at the end of life right now. And she's certainly doing that and so beautifully helping to meet the needs in her community, which when we talk about compassionate communities, that's what it's all about, being able to recognize where there's a need and stepping in to help fill that need in any way possible. The other thing that I loved, and I mentioned this in the interview, was when she talked about living the hospice lifestyle. And that is like, I find that really sweet. I like thinking of it that way. The hospice lifestyle, you learn that lifestyle when you've worked with people at the end of life and the dying, and you learn what's really important, what really matters, and learn the best perspective to have on life and how short and fragile it is, and understand how to make the most of what you have. And so that term, the hospice lifestyle, I just really enjoyed hearing that, and that will stick with me. I'm always going to remember that. So I hope you'll check out Dr. G's work at her website, morningdovemedical.com, and take a listen to her podcast when it's back on the air, Dr. G at the Heart of Healthcare. Also, look at her books, The Real Deal About Hospice and The 7 Things Hospice Physicians Need to Know to Be Ready for Work. So thanks for joining me here today. If you enjoy content like this, I hope you will share it with other people. Let them know about the podcast and show them how to subscribe. Also, make sure you leave a rating and review for the podcast wherever you happen to listen. That's very helpful. And go to eoluniversity.com/support if you'd like to find the 3 different ways you can support this podcast and keep it on the air. So that's either joining the Patreon community, buying me a coffee every now and then, or making a donation through PayPal. And thanks so much if you choose to do that. I'll be back next week with another interview. I'll be speaking with Jokotefa Alaye about her work as a funeral professional, and we'll talk all about funeral planning and alternative funeral and burial options. So take a listen to that next week. Until then, remember that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.